And episode number 21 of the Pinstripe Lanes podcast is brought to you by the new pop filters and soundproofing that we have in the makeshift studio that we taped this in.
Welcome to the Pinstripe Lanes podcast. Here's radio host and lifelong Yankees fan, Ralphie Aversa.
Got a bit of a new setup. I actually tweeted about it at Pinstripe Lanes. You could see us there, and of course Instagram, Facebook as well, at Pinstripe Lanes for the new setup. We did not have this setup, by the way, when we taped our interview with this week's guest. We will get to all that in just a second. Welcome, though, to episode number 21. It's episode number 5 inside season 2 of the Pinstripe Lanes podcast. I am Ralphie Aversa. I have had a lot of fun watching the Yankees as of late. And taping this podcast on a weekly basis, we've had some great guests, of course, over these past few weeks. Of course, leading off the season with Giancarlo Stanton and Gary Sheffield. If you missed the surprise guest when we were having the New York conversation, maybe you go back to that one. Big Poppy was on that episode. Of course, last week, our buddy Mark Lobel from Lobel's, who I was at the stadium last Wednesday for the Brett Gardner Grand Slam against the Red Sox. I think Mark was in Miami. I don't know if he was at the game or not. I meant to get back to the stadium this past weekend. I didn't. Of course, the Yankees now in the midst of their first of two West Coast trips this season. They'll do another one around Labor Day weekend or the weekend before Labor Day. But right now, they'll wrap things up in Anaheim with the Angels. And then they'll go to San Francisco, a trip that I, by the way, would have loved to have made. I just wasn't able to get it together between work stuff. And then also this weekend, quick side note, yours truly will be hosting the Friends of St. Jude, New York gala at the National Geographic Space in Times Square. Did it last year. They had it at 235th, the rooftop. This year, it's in Times Square at National Geographic. I hear it's a very cool event space. It's a great night of food and drink, and of course, it benefits an amazing cause with our friends over at St. Jude as they help all types of children from all different walks of life who are obviously facing a number of different obstacles. All right, so without further ado, though, let's get to a couple quick notes before we get to this week's guest. And by the way, this week's guest, probably my favorite guest we've ever had on the Pinstripe Lanes podcast, and I think it will be yours as well. Before we get to that, we mentioned the Mother's Day hats are out. I believe the full collection is out, and now the Memorial Day hats, basically the MLB's version of Salute to Service, which of course the NFL does in the month of November. The Yankees, along with all of the other MLB teams, will be donning camo-inspired hats and stance socks, and I believe they'll do something to the jerseys again this year as well. That collection is out. I will save my opinion on it for a later episode. Again, the Yankees won't even be wearing any of that merch for another month or so. And of course, again, like the Mother's Day gear that goes out, MLB pledges all of the proceeds from its royalties to go to various causes benefiting veterans, which are worthy causes. I still maintain that there may be more effective ways to benefit said causes, but that's another podcast for another time. Been a lot of fun to watch the Yankees, even though, yes, West Coast. And this is my first time watching the Yankees on the West Coast with a normal 9-to-5-ish job. And now I realize what everybody else complains about when the Yankees are on the West Coast. I used to work nights and it was great. I actually loved the West Coast trips because it usually meant that, you know, when I signed off of the radio show, I could either go home and or go to a bar, you know, have a cold beverage and watch the Yankees instead of watching the entire game in the studio while I was on the radio. And so now it's, you know, flip side, and so I am 2-for-2 with falling asleep. Now, granted, you know, the one game was zooming, the first game out in Anaheim, zooming along Monday night, and then it ends up going 14 innings. And then last night, it's another story for another time. But nonetheless, I did fall asleep both times. I will say, though, it's kind of nice waking up the next morning. You grab your phone and you get the at-bat notification that the Yankees pulled through and won, especially last night with navigating through Chad Green and the bases loaded diaries. he'll get to write that next chapter in Moosic, Pennsylvania. Thank you very much, Mr. Green, and away you go, along with Kyle Higashioka. Nice to see, by the way, somebody come back from the injured list in Gary Sanchez. He was he flew to Anaheim last night. He's back on the team, activated today. Of course, since our last taping, we lost number 99 to an oblique, and we're going to have our buddy Jimmy McKay on to talk about that, doctor of physical therapy. Maybe we'll get him on at some other point. By the sounds of things, we'll have some time to do that, because I think Mr. Judge is going to be down for a bit. It's just, what can you do but laugh at this point, you know? That and wonder what's going on with the wellness and training and fitness team with the Yankees, because I think that's a legit question at this point as well. All right, so that's wraps up as far as our notes for this week. Let's get to the guest for this week. Again, one of my favorites, perhaps my favorite period. The type of guy who, and I'll say this again, doesn't need an introduction because of the career he's had. Marconi Award winner, the whole nine. The Marconis, by the way, basically the Oscars for radio. And there is a specific reason why we wanted him on, particularly this season. We will explain that. We actually get right into that. Our very first question that we will ask him. MLB Network, High Heat, and of course, Mad Dog Sports Radio, Mad Dog Unleashed. The great, the incomparable, Christopher Mad Dog Russo. Our guest this week on episode number 21 of the Pinstripe Lanes podcast. And welcome back to the Pinstripe Lanes podcast. I'm Ralphie Aversa. Our guest this week really needs no introduction, but we will let you know that High Heat with Christopher Russo airs on MLB Network every weekday at 1 Eastern. And of course, he's the host of Mad Dog Unleashed on SiriusXM's Mad Dog Sports Radio weekdays at 3 Eastern. Christopher Mad Dog Russo, thank you so much for the time. Ralphie Aversa, Pinstripe Lanes podcast.
Ralphie, great to do it, Ralph. How are you, pal? Okay, what's going on?
I'm doing well. Here's why I wanted to have you on. Let's get right into it. It's the 10-year anniversary of New Yankee Stadium, and if you're an aficionado, a fan of your career and of Mike and the Mad Dog, you probably remember that back in March of 2008, one of the last kind of big on-air arguments you and your old partner Mike Francesa had was about the building of New Yankee Stadium. For those who don't remember it or want to go back and rewatch it, it's available on YouTube. Essentially, Mike was for the building of a New Yankee Stadium. Mad Dog was against the building of a new Yankee Stadium. Here we are 10 years later, benefit of hindsight. Doggy, has your view changed at all? Do you think they should have stayed with the old stadium or renovated it, or have you warmed up?
The old stadium's nicer. I mean, the old stadium had more charm to it. The old stadium had more noise to it. The old stadium, the ball didn't fly out of there. It wasn't a bandbox like this new stadium is. I understand that it's you know, that you can make more money. It's more profitable with a new ballpark with restaurants and suites and the freshness of it. I get that. And the Yankees, for the most part, did not use any public money. I also get that, which is a positive. But I think that there is a longing for the old days with the old stadium. So from that standpoint, the old stadium to me is a little bit more, it's more charming and noisier. And again, it was a much fairer park than this new ballpark is, because, you know, this ballpark, the ball flies out of there with the wind currents and all that. The Yankees will never admit it, but Citi Field's a much nicer park than the new Yankee Stadium is. And I know I'm biased because they don't like the Yankees. To me, the Yankee Stadium is almost like a museum to the Yankees than it is a ballpark. So I will still vote for the old stadium myself.
I will say, when the stadium first opened, my view on this has essentially stayed the same. It's evolved a little bit over the past 10 years. But I will say, when the stadium first opened, it did, to your point, it felt like a shopping mall with a baseball diamond in the middle. That's kind of the vibe I got, which is obviously not what you want with Yankee Stadium. Doggy, as you've traveled around and you've gotten to see what they've done with Fenway, what they've done with Wrigley, I mean, even now, you know, Angel Stadium and Dodger Stadium are getting up there in age. Does that reaffirm your point at all as you've traveled to these other ballparks?
Well, I mean, listen, I think that, you know, Fenway, to me, they have maximized every nickel that they could have maximized it. It's too tight. You know, there's plenty of seats which you can't see. I actually think, unless you have a good seat, and there's not many of them to be had, I kind of think Fenway's a little overrated. And plus the fact it's not in downtown Boston. I like Wrigley Field better. It's a little bit more centrally located. They've done a ton of work on it. I haven't been there in a couple of years. But I actually think Wrigley Field is a better park than Fenway is. I am a big believer in the new park that is within walking distance of downtown, which is what, you know, essentially Baltimore is and San Diego is. And although it's a stretch of a walk, AT&T in San Francisco is, Cleveland is, Coors Field is, Minnesota is, Cincinnati is. I like those parks more than I like the park that, you know, is the big humongous affair, and that you know, doesn't have a lot of charm to it. To me, Yankee Stadium doesn't have a ton of charm to it. Fenway has got charm because of its great history, so I can't say it's lacking in charm, but I do think that it's very, very tight. It's a city block. It's very, very tight. For my money, you know, I think Petco, and no, it's got no history, but I think Petco is a tremendous park in San Diego. I think Target Field in Minnesota is a very underrated park. You know, I don't like Washington that much. I've been there a lot. I'm not a big, I don't like Miami that much. I've been there. You know, there are, you know, I think Houston's a good park. I mean, I think there's five or six. I think you got to basically break them down to the ballpark that's the older ballpark, Dodger Stadium, Yankee Stadium, theoretically, Fenway, Wrigley, that kind of park, and then the newer park. I think you got to break them down on what you like better. Camden is still a great park, too. I like the charming new park that has about 40,000 seats. That's the kind of park that I like.
Christopher Mad Dog Russo here on the Pinstripe Lanes podcast. I'm Ralph Iaversa. I trust your opinion on this for a number of different reasons, but you know, the common refrain that I'm sure you heard and that I certainly heard as a fan throughout the 2017 postseason was, wow, this place sounds like the old ballpark. Agree, disagree?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's some part, and I was there in 09 when they won their championship, and obviously then too, when they closed down the old Yankee Stadium in 08. I just think, you know, I think a big issue with the new Yankee Stadium is the fact that there's too many home runs. I mean, right field's a joke. You had a pop-up, the ball leaves the park. So, I mean, I have a little issue. Now, I understand the old ballpark too, the ball left the park, and obviously they built it for Ruth, 295 feet down the right field line. So I don't want to make it sound like that it's been a great pitcher's park for against all sorts of hitters. Left-hand hitters have always had a huge advantage at Yankee Stadium. But I mean, to me, this park, I mean, it really, it's a bandbox. I mean, and I think the Yankee hierarchy would reluctantly agree, and I think the hierarchy is a little embarrassed by it. I don't think they figured out the wind currents. I think it's probably built a little lower. The freeze there on the top is a little different, I think. So I think the Yankee people would not like the idea that the home run has now become too much commonplace. And I think that hurts the charm. I think that just hurts the history of the stadium, myself. And I think it's a problem. Now, the park itself is fine. I mean, nobody's going to argue with the park itself. I do think it's too much of a museum. I think if you're a Yankee fan, you like it. But Citi Field's a better park. Yeah. Now, Citi Field is not located in a great spot. I mean, you can't get there, and you got to take a subway. There's nothing to do around it. But I like Citi Field better than I like Yankee Stadium as a baseball park. I just think it's got a more of a better feel to it as a park than Yankee Stadium does. I don't think Yankee Stadium's a great place. And nor do I think the Meadowlands, where the Giants spent $1 billion. I don't think that park, that's not a great stadium either for football. So, you know, for whatever the reason, I'm not in love with those two parks here in New York City.
Yeah, I definitely agree on MetLife. It's almost too big, and it's actually even more sterile than Yankee Stadium from a feeling standpoint.
Yes, very, very sterile, very sterile.
Quick trip down memory lane, favorite memory from the old stadium?
Well, I'm not a Yankee fan, so to ask me to, you know, to reminisce about the great ballpark, since I'm not a fan, it's a little tricky for me to do that. I mean, I would think Reggie's three homers in 77. I mean, I certainly would think the Boone home run against the Red Sox in 2003.
Were you there for that?
Yes, I was.
Oh,
yes,
wow.
I was. I would think, you know, certainly Shambliss' home run in 76. Which was, you know, right when the stadium was built again, and when the Yankees were back in the Bronx and not at Shea. I think that was a huge moment. You know, those, I mean, obviously, then you throw in the games against, you know, certainly the championships against the Braves when Girardi tripled in the fifth inning against Maddux in 1996. I think you have to put that in there. I would certainly put in maybe the grand slam by Tino of Langston in 98. I think you'd have against San Diego in game one. I think you'd have to put that in there. You know, there's a, you know, you got to think of the big games where the Yankees have won. I mean, certainly the game in November against Arizona,
yeah,
and that series against the Diamondbacks when they won. You know, they lost a series, but I think you'd have to put those three in there too. So, I mean, listen, the original Yankee Stadium is great too. Let's not forget that. But the stadium in the middle of it, you know, between when they refurbished it, really between 1976 and 2008. I mean, you just think of the years the Yankees, you know, hit big home runs or had big moments in that ballpark, and that is the moment that the Yankee fan would identify with.
And you're being very kind because this is a Yankee fan podcast, but he still brings it up, so I'm sure it's still fresh in your memory too, you sitting there in 04 game 7 just needling Mike the entire time. I know you had a blast with that one.
I sat with Eddie Coleman that day too, and Eddie had his old sweater and old paraphernalia in which his father grew up as a Red Sox fan and remembered being part of the 1918 World Championship. That was the year that ended early. The Red Sox beat the Cubs that year in five games, I believe it was, and Eddie Coleman's father ran to the train station when the Red Sox came back from Chicago after they won that championship. And Eddie had a lot of that stuff that his father had at that Game 7 there that year against the Yankees when, of course, Ortiz and Damon hit the home run. So that was a special deal. That was a blowout game. I mean, and the Red Sox obviously exercised a lot of demons. I thought the Red Sox were going to win that game. And I thought the Red Sox, after they won 4-5 in Fenway, the way they did, I thought they were actually going to win Game 6 and 7 at Yankee Stadium. And, of course, they did.
You know, I didn't think they were going to, now obviously I'm a fan, so I'm biased. I didn't think they were going to win game six. I was a student at Syracuse at the time. I actually drove down and was at the Bloody Sock game. Fortunately, unfortunately, obviously a big moment in baseball history, brutal to see there. So I was there with, you know,
A-Rod
and Arroyo and all that.
And a home run there early by Bellhorn of Lieber.
Yep.
You know, I had a lot of my buddies come down for that who were Red Sox fans. And those are two great days. And the Red Sox went 8-0 to finish the year against two big-time teams who won over 100 games in the Yankees and the Cardinals. So let's throw that in the mix, too. The Red Sox had that incredible finish to that year. But if you're going to break a curse, as they had to break it, sometimes you got to do something extra dramatic. I was at game game three of that series when the Yankees scored 19 runs and basically banged around the Green Monster. I remember leaving that stadium with Mark Melusis, leaving Fenway on that Saturday night. And I said, well, listen, if you're ever going to break a curse and you're ever going to do something, you know, historic, you better do it in it where you, sometimes you need to do something dramatic. And, you know, what would be more dramatic than the Red Sox coming from 3-0 down to beating the Yankees? So I had a little inkling that maybe something was in the air in 2004.
A few more minutes here with Christopher Mad Dog Russo on the Pinstripe Lanes podcast. I'm Ralph Iaversa. I heard on the radio show you had the commissioner on recently, and something you always do, you go out of your way to make sure that you obviously thank him for his time, but also note that with the show that you have on MLB Network, there's no, they don't try to cramp your style at all. They don't try to shove anything down your throat. They don't try to neuter you at all either. That's the truth, regardless of, you can pretty much
that
go.
That is the truth. I mean, listen, there is always some level, you know, you can't go unbelievably crazy, but listen, it is a television network. I mean, you can't go crazy on a Today Show either,
right.
But they generally speaking, and that's why it's a great place to work. I've never gotten a call from Manfred. I've never gotten a call from anybody there, Tony Petitti on Park Avenue. They allow me to say what I want and do what I want. Now, again, within reason. You know,
right.
If I go out there and say that, you know, a certain owner is the worst guy in America and should be disbarred from the sport, I mean, that's going to cause me some trouble. But, you know, outside of being that outlandish, they allow me really, you know, to say what I want. Now, and I get on the owners with these disputes with the Players Association. You know, I kill the American League. I've gone on to tanking. I get on the American League teams that are horrendous. You know, I pick on the players. I do, you know, I do segments, good jobs, bad jobs, in which I'll pick a, you know, something that I don't like with the team. Generally, I mean, I got all over La Russa with the whole thing with Harold Baines.
Of course.
I mean, generally speaking, they leave me alone. You got to give them a lot of credit for that. You know, whatever that might be. It's the only show on there that's a little different than the other fair. The other fair is a lot about describing, you know, pitches and hitters. And, you know, it's really more of a down-to-earth grassroots baseball network. I can get a little different, be a little bit more, you know, as a talk show host per se, and I think they need that. I mean, I'm not saying that it's, you know, they can survive without me, believe me, but I think that that little difference gives the network a little edge, and I think in a lot of ways my job there every day is to push the envelope. Don't push it too far where it gets to be outlandish, but push it far enough where it's got a little edge to it. And I think my job every day is to, you know, don't go crazy about it and don't just do it to do it. But my job every day is to find that level where, you know, the average fan would respect what we're saying about baseball. And I think baseball trusts me to do that. And I think baseball understands that there's going to be days they're not going to like me. But I think baseball also understands that I'll promote the sport in a proper way, too. I do, you know, I mean, let's face it, Ralphie, I do probably 15 interviews a week on the game. You know, I go on all the other shows. So, I mean, I think it's, you know, it's a worthwhile marriage on both ends, to be quite honest with you. I wouldn't do it if they told me what I can and cannot say, and they wouldn't have me if I went too nutty. So there's a happy medium there.
Wrap it up with Christopher Mad Dog Russo. I think this is a good place to end it, because right now, obviously, we got hockey playoffs. We got basketball playoffs. NFL schedule just released. You would almost never know it that we're, I mean, I know, granted, we're not even a month into the baseball season, but we are into the baseball season. Is this just a time of year where, especially in the Northeast with the weather and everything else, baseball, is there anything baseball can do to improve its relevance, especially this time of year, or is it just too difficult?
Well, in New York, they're in good shape. St. Louis, they're in good shape. I know, those two, I mean, I think they're in, you know, L.A., they're in good shape. I mean, Houston, they're in good shape. I mean, they do very, very well. Chicago with the Cubs. I mean, they're excellent in many a market. What baseball needs to do, and I've said this 1,000 times, what baseball needs to do is they need to figure out a way to get to become part of the national conversation. And part of it's ESPN, which jams the NBA down your throat, you know, and all their shows are sort of geared to the NFL and the NBA, especially now. They don't do very little baseball. Fox is the same way. They need baseball to figure out a way to get the sport, you know, in the daily conversation on a daily basis. And there are certain times of the year that job is easier, and there are other times of the year that job is harder. And right now, as you said, Masters with Tiger, you know, the NBA playoffs just getting started. Certain markets, the NHL playoffs, you're going to have some horse racing forthcoming. The NFL draft will swallow everything up this coming week.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes they struggle with that. And I think that, you know, it's a long season. As you said, the weather, a lot of cities in the American League, the teams aren't that good. You know, are they more wrapped up right now in the Royals or the Chiefs? Are they more wrapped up right now in the Indians or the Browns?
Right.
And I think as we, you know, the Lions or the Tigers, the Vikings or the Twins. And I think there is, you know, it's Mariners or the, well, the Mariners they like because they've been winning, but the Mariners or Russell Wilson. So there are situations where, you know, there are certain times of the year, pockets that is a struggle for them. And unlike the NBA and the NHL, which gets a big advantage of contesting their postseason when the NFL is dormant, the Major League Baseball has to conduct their postseason when the NFL and college football are big.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a problem. I mean, for instance, Game 5 of the World Series this year is going to be up against Green Bay and Kansas City. Think about that.
Wow.
Could the NFL come up with a better game up against Game 5 of the World Series than Rodgers against Mahomes?
Oh, my God. Wow. Unbelievable.
So, I mean, I that's something that football and that's something that basketball and the NCAA and the NHL and, you know, they don't have to deal with that. And baseball does because their season, you know, comes down to, you know, the juice comes in October, and that's when the NFL and college football in full swing. So it makes it hard for them. So baseball, you know, is kind of grappling a little bit with when it becomes, you know, when it can become a national storyline. They always do great locally. Yankees in the postseason, the Cubs in the postseason, Dodgers, Red Sox, Houston, St. Louis, they do very, very well. But, you know, a Rocky Brewer series, you know, NLCS on a Sunday in October up against, you know, a big football game, that's a tough, that's a problem for them. And that's what baseball has to try to overcome, makes it hard. Makes it hard.
High Heat with Christopher Russo, MLB Network, weekdays 1 Eastern. Mad Dog Unleashed, Sirius XM's Mad Dog Sports Radio, weekdays at 3 Eastern. Christopher, Mad Dog Russo, thank you so much again for the time. We really appreciate it.
Rafi, great job. You did a good job here, Rafi. Well done on your part. Excellent.
And that is a wrap on episode number 21 of the Pinstripe Lanes podcast. Thank you for rating, reviewing, subscribing wherever you get podcasts. Don't forget, we're at Pinstripe Lanes and all of your favorite social networks. A big thank you to Lorraine and Lou over at MLB Network for helping to coordinate this and make this happen. And also, thanks again to, you know, Christopher Mad Dog Russo giving, I'll paraphrase him, this is a dope little podcast. He did not say that, by the way. He was so gracious. He was so great. Called on time. Gave me 20 minutes. I mean, he's got two national shows, TV and radio, he's got to do later in the day. And there he is on the phone with me from his office, you know, before he's got to do both, just doing this podcast. So again, thank you to Lorraine and Lou for helping to coordinate on site. And of course, thanks to Doggy as well for making some time. Big fan of his. Big fan of you for listening. And a big fan of these Yankees as they continue this West Coast trip. Hopefully they wrap things up tonight on a pleasant note in Anaheim. And then they go, actually, you know, coincidentally enough, face off against Doggy's team, the team that he roots for, the Giants, over at AT&T in San Francisco. That's a wrap again on episode number 21 of the Pinstripe Lanes podcast. Let's go, Yankees.